Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo, the weekly show from the Bagel Tech Network on photography. With me, Ewan Rankin, professional photographer here in Birmingham. No Kyle Swagger today because he's got the lurgy. He beat me to crying off sick because I was going to go sick today as well because I've got it too, which is, we've decimated. That's the problem you get from running a broadcast network with a bunch of old farts. We're always bloody ill. Joining me is the only healthy person I think that we've got this week is... what's your name again? Alex Fox. Alex Fox.
God. Yes, hello.
The brain is addled, mate. I'm sorry. It's the drugs.
Yeah, and you got a cold.
I've got a bad cold, yeah. So how's things going, mate? Good week?
I've had a lot worse. Yeah, it's been nice. I've done some work. I've made some friends and
influenced
people.
It's
been very nice.
Jolly good. Straight into it then, because I think we'll be having a half-hour show today. let's get the arguing over and done with, because I think you and I are going to have a little bit of a contretemps over the Fuji Finepix X100. That's kind of really hit this week, and sold out. Nay.
Because it's a proper camera.
Because it's a proper camera.
Yes.
Right. Now... let's just look at the specs on this thing, because it's a 12.3 megapixel camera, so that's pretty good. Yeah, we're not talking about big sensors now rather than big numbers on the sensor, so yeah. we're very happy so far. We're aligned. SD card only.
Well, physical size of the machine, I'd say probably a must as opposed to something they chose to do, but yeah.
So we're still aligned there. That's all right. A JPEG shooting and also RAW and JPEG simultaneously. Now that's pretty special, isn't it, for a compact?
Yeah, I mean that's what you get with your professional cameras. So yeah, that's nice. So,
H.264 movie with stereo sound in high definition. 1080p.
Yeah, great. I mean, it'd be nice if it had the headphone socket for Chris, but, you know, for us mere mortals, we're not too worried about that.
Absolutely. F2 on the aperture, which I think is extremely good.
And on a proper lens.
And a proper lens as well as.
We haven't fallen out yet.
No. A good ISO range, 200 to 6400. So, again, we're still pretty agreed on that, I would have thought. £1,000.
Yeah, I thought there might be an issue there. I thought somewhere there was a point where I thought, you know, this is going too well. Well, look, the thing is,
are they having a laugh? Come on.
You know, we had a chat the other day, and I said, if Hasselblad brought out a compact camera, and you were making fun of me, saying who's going to pay that sort of money for a compact camera. I have known. And do know many photographers. I mean, obviously, we're not all as rich and as wonderfully well off as we all used to be. But, you know, they'd pay £2,000 for a miniature Minox, which is a nice little camera, nice little lens. It costs you £2,000. They'd buy a Leica that they'd keep in the drawer for £5,000.
Yeah.
You know, and this is just the digital equivalent of having something that's really, really good for a lot of money, which you probably won't use very much.
But
it's always been the way, always.
Well, I mean, what we're talking about here is a camera that really has got... It's captured the imagination of the buyers, I think, because of the fact it looks old. I mean, if you see the carrying case that comes with it, it's exactly like the brown leather carrying case that my dad's old Kodak came in. He's still got it, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful camera. Absolutely a thing of beauty. But this thing is not £1,000 better than some of the other compact cameras that are shooting out at £200 to £400, so another £600. It's just not that good. I'm sorry.
I agree, it's not that good, but it's £1,000 different, if that makes any sense. Right, a quick question, Ewan. I'm using a £100 microphone, and how much is yours?
Mine's £500, yeah.
Exactly. Now, it's not probably worth £400 different, but it is £400 more special. It's £400 more classy. It's an analog. It does all the things that you probably shouldn't need to do in this wonderful, brilliant digital age.
But what I'll say is, we talked about microphones there, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, if you're saying I've got a £500 microphone, that's all well and good, because I bought a good quality condenser microphone that I knew would do for me for a long period of time. If you're talking about going up to a Neumann at £2,000 to £5,000, there is no way on God's green earth you would get me to part with $2,500 to $5,000 for a Neumann microphone, because in terms of the cost value that I gain and the benefit of the sound quality that's improved, I'll grant you it's an improvement, it is just not worth the money. That's what we're talking about here, surely.
Yeah, but proportionately, we're talking about the difference between the microphone I'm using and the microphone you're using. It's a lot of it is to do with how much you like your sound, e.g., and for example, how much you like your pictures. Now, I looked at some of these test pictures, and
they're good.
And maybe it takes a photographer to notice it, but there is something about the difference in quality that says this has been shot on a professional camera, but it's not. It's shot on a compact camera.
Yeah.
And this is the first compact camera, I would say, if you said that was shot on a Nikon D3X or a top-of-the-range Canon, I wouldn't have known that you weren't telling me the truth. I mean, let's go back to this camera. This camera's got loads and loads and loads of things that the amateur market would go, why the hell do you want that? It hasn't got a zoom.
No.
It's a fixed lens. You know, it's like in the old days, if you wanted to bring something closer, you actually have to move.
Well, no, but that's not a bad thing. I mean,
it's a brilliant thing.
The best day shooting I have are with a fixed 50mm prime lens.
No, perfect.
And not with a zoom.
People who buy compact cameras probably aren't even going to understand the concept of actually having to move closer to an object.
Yeah.
What this is basically saying is there's a million and one things for the amateur market out there, and this is for the professional that needs a small camera, and you are not going to get a better picture than this from anything.
So are we talking about people, photojournalists, buying this, carrying it around, going to war zone hotspots, that kind of thing, something they can pull out quickly, take an image and get back in the car and drive off before they get shot?
And yeah, and they can also take a very good image.
Would you use this for any commercial work?
Looking at the quality of those pictures, if I had to go somewhere and I couldn't take my big equipment and I had to, you know, sometimes I go to openings at various academies and places, and I go, right, you know, they're quite posh events. Now, the one thing I hate is being a photographer, you probably get exactly the same thing. You never get invited to anywhere without the, if you just happen to bring a camera, it would be nice. You know, it's just sort of, yeah, I don't get invited to a wedding without being expected to take some picture.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, and it would be nice if someone didn't ask, and they always do. It must be because we're so good.
Absolutely.
But I would love to have something in my pocket where I didn't walk around looking like the hired help, and actually be able to take it out, take a really good picture, because my name's on that picture, you know. When the wedding pictures come back and they look at it and they say, who took that rubbish picture? And someone says, Alex. I'm like, oh, please don't. Well, you know, I can't do that. So I take a proper camera and I walk around looking like a photographer rather than somebody at a wedding.
So here's the straight question, mate. In the current economic climate, would you part with a grand for this camera?
In the current economic climate, I would say it's a lot cheaper than parting with £4,000 to buy something that does the equivalent of as an SLR. So yes, I would.
So no interchangeability of lenses, fixed prime lens, and you'll still part with a grand for it. Because if you told me this was 600, I think I'd probably be sharpening my credit card while we spoke. But there's just it's the price that turns me off. The spec, the spec I salivate over. There's no question we're agreed on that. But the price just turns me off.
I agree. But if I said to you, for £1,000, you can make a £500 a day photo shoot, you'd go and buy it tomorrow.
Mm.
But for £600, you're not going to get away with that £500 a day.
See, this is the leap of faith, because we were talking before we started broadcasting about other things that we've used to take photographs and gone, well, you know, actually you couldn't tell the difference. But there's a certain element of, it's not just professional pride, it's the risk of getting caught and found out. You take a picture and you send it to someone, and they go, wow, thank you. And then they look at the EXIF data and see that you shot it on a Lumix. You know, you just wouldn't do it, because it's just not what people are paying for. They're not looking for that. They're not looking for you to come and cheat.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if you're paying £1,000 for a piece of equipment, you're actually cheating.
Yeah, but that's they're not going to know that. They're going to see you whip out a compact camera. There's a certain element of, if you pull out a big lens with a big body, they feel like they're getting value for money from it.
Yeah, but that's, again, this is why we're doing Bagel Tech Photo, because we're trying to educate people on the fact that just because something comes in a big box. I walk around, if I carry a 10x8 camera around, I mean, you know, I need to go to the gym for 6 months before I go out to work. Now, yes, it's an amazingly clever piece of equipment, but it's just a bigger box. There's nothing in it. Yeah. There really is nothing in it. That's why the thing works.
No, I grant you that.
So, you know, without being too rude, size isn't everything.
Oh, dear, there is my life right there. I'm struggling with the price, I have to say.
But that's because you're grumpy with a cold.
That's true. All right, fair enough. I'll put down to so maybe 700 without the grumpy cold.
Yeah.
That'll do. Adobe has updated Photoshop Express, and they've also got an in-app purchase system now as well. Adobe's done an awful lot with the iPhone through iTunes that's free, haven't they? And this update's free as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, before we came on air, and anyone that was listening to the pre-show show has already heard my entire argument on this subject, but I've been playing through necessity and laziness and the customer not giving me all the right information. I've been having to play with noise reduction on the full-blown CS5, and it's something I don't ever have to do because I've normally got all the information, so therefore I take the right equipment, the right lighting, etc., etc. Right. Circumstance led me to have to match something I did in studio conditions in a warehouse with fluorescent tubing. I got the picture to look good, manipulated it in the back seat of the car on my MacBook Pro, didn't pay an awful lot of attention because it looked okay, gave it to the customer, they're all happy. I've just looked at it today and the graining and the noise is incredible.
Bad. It's good.
Bad. Awful. Yeah. Now, I opened all up the TIFF files because I didn't want to go through all the conversion, which I'd already done and I was all happy with, and cleaned all the backgrounds. It was all lovely. I opened up the TIFF files in the RAW converter, which then allows you to operate all the noise corrections as if it was a RAW file. And I played with it, and within 2 minutes, I was blown away that this picture looked as good as all the pictures I spent weeks, right. I'm talking about weeks and weeks and weeks working on over the last few years, in perfect studio conditions. And I've never needed to use noise correction before, and it blew me away. If they put any percentage of that onto an iPhone application, whether you have to pay for it or not, I would tear their arm off for it, and for a considerable amount of money. Because as we know, the main problem with iPhone photography is low light noise.
It's awful. Are you suggesting it? I mean, have you bought the camera pack for this?
Have I bought it? No, because I read about it 2 days ago and I've been working, but I will be buying it.
Yeah, so the in-app purchase is a camera pack that gives you three features: noise reduction, self-timer, and auto-review. Now, the whole software itself makes it far easier to take a picture and use it from within the software rather than having to use the camera, then go and fetch it.
Sure.
Now, with this, is there a suggestion that the noise reduction that could be in this could be tailored for the iPhone, and you think might be actually quite special then, based on what you've just said?
I'm 100% sure it is tailored for the camera you're using on the device that you're running the operating system, or that you're running the Adobe software on. Right. I mean, I looked very quickly before we came on. I flicked up, and there were some examples of noise reduction, and they weren't bad.
Yeah.
I would hazard a guess, as a professional, I probably would possibly start off with a slightly better picture.
Yeah, I mean, the picture on the advertisement is a kids' party, isn't it, with balloons and stuff like that. And it's obviously shot in a McDonald's kind of restaurant, low-light kids' area. And it does look very passable, it has to be said.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're talking Adobe prices for the iPhone, so, you know, we're not talking about any substantial amount of money. And the one thing we've always said about the iPhone: beautiful camera, very good, in good light.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, you might as well not bother. So get out your pen and paper and draw it.
We could be talking about this making the iPhone camera very usable.
I think we're definitely talking about making the iPhone camera very usable.
So there you go, Fox. This week's homework is to download the application and buy the camera pack for both of us, and we've got to go out and do a photo study and report back next week.
Yes, if you're well enough to get out of the house.
I'll be all right, don't worry. Lexar has released a whole load of SDXC cards in SD format. They've got a 64 gig card and a 128 gig card have come out, and they're $200 and $330 respectively. Impressed, unimpressed? Good idea, bad idea.
I like the idea. I mean, for camera use, other than using the top of the range Hasselblad, which don't use those cards anyway.
Yeah.
For digital video, brilliant. But I mean, I was trying to equate it to the price of a 120 gig solid state drive, and it's very, very competitively priced.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, isn't it? I mean, if you could do your startup drive on your computer from an SD card that was plugged in the side, because Toshiba used to do that. You had an SD card slot that you could put a jump drive in, yeah. and that was your startup drive at just enough to carry the operating system. And I've got to say, I was at Mark Sunner's house last night, who's going to join us on the Mac show in a little while. And Mark has taken out his hard drive from his 27-inch iMac and replaced it with a 256 SSD. And he started Photoshop last night, and it was about a second and a half at most.
Brilliant.
It was absolutely incredible. I was really, really impressed with it. And there's a bit of me, because I've always, my laptop, I'm running around, because I've got so many bits of crap kicking about and photos from other things where you can guarantee I'll be someone and go, oh, have you got the photo that you took the other week? And you're like, yeah, it's on my laptop, because I keep virtually my entire photo library in one form or another, even in reduced size, on the laptop. I've got 2 terabytes on there. But based on how fast it was making his iMac, I'm sitting thinking, how much would a 512 be? Could I do it? Could I just push the boat out? But like you said, if there was a 128 gig SD slot in the side of there and I could use that as my boot drive,
sure,
that would be pretty special, wouldn't it?
I mean, you're talking about, what's it, 133, and I tried to work that out in my head. I think that's about...
20.
Is that 20 megaseconds?
20 megaseconds, yeah.
I think that's what I come up with as well. So 20 megaseconds, can you imagine having an iPad? Think about the money they'd charge you for a 16 gig iPhone, 32 gig iPhone, or the iPad. If you had a slot in, I'm right, maybe it's might be a bit much at the moment to stick in an iPhone, but you imagine sticking that sort of card in something like an iPad. I mean, who cares how quickly your music boots up? If it takes half a second, I think we could cope with that.
Well, what's quite interesting there is just on that analogy that you said, if you're talking about the difference in price between the 16 gig iPad and the 64 gig iPad, it's about $200. The 64 gig card is $200. So if you had an SD card slot that you could put this thing as extra memory boost, you for $200 you'd be getting well over that. You'd be into an 80 gig card rather.
Yeah, and it's obviously interchangeable, which it's not in any other way.
So there you go, Apple. What we need is inbuilt SD cards that we can use as boot drives, and then we can buy one of these at $300, because actually, like you say, that's a really good buy. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's exactly what it is. It's a fantastic buy at that price, isn't it?
Yeah, but you look back on cameras, look back on video cameras. It wasn't that long ago that if you could get as much on a video camera that you could put on a 4.7 gigabyte DVD, you were doing really, really well.
Yeah.
Well, you can put... you work out the figures. You can put an awful lot on very, very high HD. You can put hours and hours and hours and hours. It's perfect. Perfect piece of kit. And that's my doorbell.
Where the hell do you live?
I live next to the Houses of Parliament. I really have to take it because it's probably the postman.
Okay.
Sorry.
So there goes no editing this week.
Hello, sorry about that. Someone's invited me to a local coffee morning to raise money for the tsunami.
Are they like the Salvation Army?
Yes, exactly. Sorry about that.
Next story then, Adobe DNG Converter 6.3 update. Now, you've tagged this one as something interesting to talk about. So you lead us off, mate. What did you want to cover with this one?
Well, I mean, I will save this for a lot more in-depth conversation when Chris is back. But what the importance of the DNG and the DNG update is when we all say, well, most of us say, apart from you, and it's probably a good idea if you have the opportunity to shoot in RAW, or especially if you need the facilities that RAW give you.
If you're worried about your end manipulation of the image, RAW is significantly more flexible and versatile. If you're shooting crap for quick publication, then why bother?
Okay, I shall leave that comment hanging. but what this DNG converter, what Adobe have said is there's lots and lots and lots of different variations on the market of different types of RAW files. And unless you really are a professional, you're probably not going to have any equipment that can open up these files. So you've got a lot of amateur and semi-pro, or, you know, whatever the prosumer level of people. And they're not going to pay £600,000 for a piece of software that will open up their RAW files properly and do various things with them. So what this DNG converter is, Apple, it's a free piece of software which Apple produced. And what it does, it can open up any type of RAW file from any camera. And it converts it into a DNG file, which is a digital negative. It converts it into that. And the digital negative file is a standard which works across nearly all pieces of photographic equipment. Yeah. But it still gives you the ability to open RAW, manipulate RAW, and then save it as this type of file.
Well, there's been a few issues recently, hasn't there, with the Canon 60D not opening in some of the older versions of Photoshop, the RAW photos not coming out.
Yeah,
so again,
and it's going to get worse. I mean, every incarnation, you're going to end up with, you know, RAW converters that are going to need to be able to convert files from 10 years back. And we probably already are at 10 years back now.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse. But if you've got this very small piece of free software that's only a database, it's only going to be updated, it's not going to, you know, become bloatware. And a lot of these other bigger pieces of software are going to just stop, you know, providing the support for the older cameras, whereas this will continue.
Right.
And, I mean, for instance, when Chris made a comment, and he will be back, but Chris teaches. So everybody that comes into his lectures could conceivably all be using a different camera. So they all conceivably could be using a different RAW file. And what this one piece of software, which they can all purchase, is the wrong word, all get for nothing will do,
yeah,
is will put everybody's images in exactly the same format so they can take it from there. So I think it's an important piece of software that a lot of people aren't aware of, which will enable them to use a lot more functionality in their cameras.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to adobe.com/support/downloads and type in DNG converter, 6.3 is the version number that you want, but it's free. Just download it straight away and you're off, and it sends you to the Mac version or the Windows version, depending on what it is that you're running automatically. Brilliant. Should we do some questions?
Please do.
Right, question one. Hi, gents. I've got a Canon 5D and I love it. It's about 8 months old now and I've spotted some dust on the sensor. I feel pretty confident in cleaning it myself, but it struck me that there may be more to know. Do you guys have any tips for sensor cleaning which may enhance my knowledge? Michael Davis in Gwent in Wales.
Okay.
Do you want to start us off? You get to start us off on all of these week. It's not fair.
Beg your pardon?
You get to start all the questions this week.
Right. Ewan?
Yes,
would you like to start us off?
No, go ahead.
Okay. That's just as well, because I know what I'm talking about.
Oh!
Right, when it comes to...
Bitch.
Now, when it comes to lens cleaning, it's a subject that's quite close to my heart, because I've killed so many cameras. The first thing I'd say is, if this is your only camera, and as you say you love it, go and get it cleaned professionally. If you've had it 8 months and you've got a bit of dust on it, if it costs you £20-25 to get it cleaned professionally, one, they have the equipment. Two, it will be spotless when you get it back. And three, they're insured. They mess it up, they replace your camera. It is so, so easy. We're talking about microscopic pieces of dust. Now, the way you clean it, first of all, you blow it out. I've got various blowing pieces of equipment.
The torpedo one's pretty good, isn't it?
Beg your pardon?
The torpedo blowers.
Yeah. I use those all the time, but not necessary to clean the lens. It's just I give it a quick puff because I think, well, you know, anything that can come out easily will come out. Now, with the Canon, it uses ultrasonic lens shaking. So if something's on it, it's not coming off it. It's actually now stuck. It was obviously something that had a tiny bit of moisture in it, and now it's actually stuck itself to the low-pass filter, which is the piece of glass in front of your sensor. In fact, it's not actually your sensor that's dirty. It's a piece of glass that they put on, which isn't necessarily needed. Well, they'll argue with you about that, but you know that's the way they build the lenses. The sensors. Now, next thing you use a chemical. I think it's an alcohol solution that you put on with the correct size. It looks like a miniature spatula. You wipe it on with that, and it supposedly the alcohol dissolves and you get a very clean lens. Now, all these things are perfectly fine, perfectly adequate, unless you have a microscopic piece of grit anywhere within that camera. These people, they do it in environments where it's a dust-free environment, not as we look around thinking, well, it's pretty clear, there's no dust. There is dust. I mean, I'm going on and on, I'm sorry, but I really would say there's lots of very cheap pieces of equipment out there for you to do it yourself, but I really strongly advise you against doing it yourself. They all make claims, but I really, really wouldn't do it. For the £20 or £25 it will cost you every year to get your camera clean professionally, get it done professionally.
But I think the environment's the key part there as well. And if you're talking about changing your lenses, the one thing to do is to make sure that you're not in an adverse environment when you change your lens, if you can possibly help it. Don't try and change your lens when you're in a dust bowl, because you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You're going to get far more in there. Dust gets into the camera regardless. But the worse it is in terms of the environment, the less likely you should be to change the lenses. Stop it getting in the first place if you can possibly help it.
Yeah.
Generally speaking as well, you know, just a light bit of saline or just even just plain water from a filtered source and a cotton bud and dry it. You'll lightly damp and that's it. You'll get very good results with that. You don't have to go overboard. I mean, you gave me a slagging off for my sensor, but I mean, again, going back to what we were talking about with raw images, most of what I shoot, you know, I shoot in an industrial environment. So the last thing I want to do is start screwing around with my lenses when I get there. I want to be ready to go and shoot the picture that I want to shoot with before I start pulling my
granted.
Lenses on.
I mean, in your, you'd probably do exactly what I do. If I know I'm going into a, you know, an artist studio or, you know, somewhere where they've been restoring furniture, I put all my lenses on the camera outside before I walk in. Yeah. So there's nothing sealed. And another thing I do as per habit is I have a blower always in my case. And whenever I'm changing lens or doing anything, as soon as the bottom cap comes off that lens, I blow it. It's just a matter of routine.
Yeah.
I blow the bottom of the lens before I even take the cover off the camera to change it. And it's just habit. But, you know, you will get dirt on your sensor. You know, there's nothing you can do. Even if you never, ever, ever take the lens off your camera, you will get dirt in it.
See, I mean, the other thing as well is that what's your view on compressed air? Because mine, I know I won't use it because you very often get lots of moisture gathering there. There's particles that come out.
Yeah.
And if you've got it upside down or you've got it on a slight angle, you'll get a very fine mist from the condensing that'll attract from the air as it goes and it cools. It'll condense with the air and you'll end up with a fine smear of liquid across your sensor or your lens as well.
I mean, I've got a compressed air miniature tank and it's got all these, it looks like a hospital room. You know, it's got all these various filters and it's got all these, you know, make sure the air doesn't do this, that and the other. And, you know, the very few times I've done it, I've been sort of somewhere where I can't get it cleaned and I've got to get the shot right. And I've been so nervous because I've written off so many cameras. And we're talking about microscopic scratches.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, do yourself a favour. It's a nice camera. And if you like it, I mean, where are you, Gwent? I don't know. How far's a major town from you? I mean, you could probably do it by post, but there will be
Cardiff,
somewhere.
I mean, Newport,
yeah.
Gwent, Cardiff. It's same kind of area, isn't it? So it should
be fairly close. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Wales isn't that big a place. Please don't do it yourself. Once a year, treat yourself and get your camera cleaned.
Wise words. Question two. Hi, guys. I'm still very much an engaged amateur when it comes to photography, but I've started to dabble with shooting into light, sun mostly. I've been trying to capture a decent lens flare, but so far I've got nothing or just burn the image out, but not my eyes. Any tips or how-tos with lens flare?
Yeah. Do you want to go this one or...?
Well, excuse me. The thing that we've Alex and I have talked about before we started here is that with lens flare, it's one of those things that it's almost like a science experiment because you won't see the result when you try and line the shot up. It's almost like you take a picture and then you'll look at the image and see that you've got lens flare and you need to try and recreate that. Generally speaking, if you wanted to do it, you'd be looking at neutral density filters and that kind of stuff where you'd start to pair out the light, or a polarizing filter, which would have helped with the light direction. The best way of putting lens flare on that I've seen is to use Photoshop, though, because you get a much more natural looking lens flare if you just don't use the stock one that they give you. What I tend to do is put the lens flare on, and then what I'll do is start to mess with it through making multiple layers of it and blurring those and then changing opacity till it starts to look a bit fuzzier, and it looks far better, to be honest, and it's more controllable. It's aggravation. There we go. What I meant to say,
your lens flare is, and probably should be, something that it's a quirk of photography. You know, I mean, you can, to a certain extent, you know, you can set up a shot to try and get some lens flare in it. But what will tend to happen is you have to use the sun, and then, you know, if you're lucky enough to find a spot when you review your picture that you got some nice lens flare, then that's the only picture you're going to be able to take. So anything that's in that view is all you're going to get. Yeah. Because the once you move that camera 1 degree, your lens flare's gone. That's the way lens flare works. So, you know, you can shoot for lens flare, and then you can move various people around if that's what you're trying to do into that shot. But you can't make a shot and then try and get lens flare to work. It doesn't work that way.
No.
It's a quirk of photography. It can make a nice picture into a spectacular picture. But in general, most photographers nowadays would add it afterwards in Photoshop purely as the image capture is what's important, and the lens flare is an additional piece of excitement on top of that.
I mean, the thing is, the stuff that's in CS5... The lens flare is extremely good in that, but the thing I find with it is it's too crisp, it's too good. It looks like a vector graphic, which is what it actually is.
Sure.
What you need to do is make multiple layers, start blurring the layers below, and then start messing around with opacity until you get something that looks more natural and has just got that little fuzzy edge but has got a sharp core to it. Then you can make it look really, really good.
Sure. I mean, one of the things I've done recently with lens flare in Photoshop is... I've put it on, but as a very low, you know, you can actually, it's like an iris. You can make it brighter or smaller. It's like an aperture setting, if you like, on the lens flare. Mm. And what I've done with that is that I've put it on quite low, and then I've just copied more and more layers. And you don't have to redo the setting because it's the last filter you use. And then I've just played with the opacity of various levels to get it right. But the one thing you've got to watch with that is you get... some beautiful sort of color aberrations and circles around the bottom of what would be your lens flare, but you can very, very easily burn out the actual bright top part. So if you do it in layers, you can delete the bright top part layers and then just leave the color bit at the bottom.
The other thing we're always going on about is that, you know, photography is very much about capturing the moment, and if you're screwing around trying to get an effect light lens flare, which is extremely hit or miss, the chances you'll lose the position of the sun, you'll lose the effect of the lighting that you want in the image that you're shooting or the scene that you're shooting. So you're better off to just make sure you capture it properly and then do the screwing around afterwards.
Yeah.
Cameron Morgan, that was from in Washington. It could be Tyne and Weir, or it could be America, it didn't say. Question three. Hi, guys. Love the show. Simple question. I'm thinking of buying a Canon 2x converter to go with my Tamron zoom lens. Is this a good idea? And what are the things I should consider if I go ahead and buy it? Gary.
Is that for Gary to answer?
No, it's from Gary. Didn't put any more. Just Gary.
Okay. Would you like me to do this?
Go ahead, you start, mate. I hate it when Carl's not here.
Yeah.
He makes all the hard decisions.
Exactly. Right, Tamron and two times converter on the Canon. Now, I happen to own a Tamron, and I happen to own a two times converter on a Nikon rather than a Canon.
Uh-huh.
Right. Now, the first thing to say is they're a nice little bit of kit. You can get converters that go from about £50 to about £500, and there's an enormous difference in the quality. What the problem is with the converters, especially on, shall we say, some of the less expensive lenses, is it completely messes up your exposure. It looks like one piece of glass. It looks like, well, two pieces of glass, in fact. What it actually is doing, it's changing the quality and the amount of light that's coming through to the camera. Now, the camera is reading it from the front of the lens, and it's saying, okay, this exposure should be, I don't know, a 125th for f8 for X amount of this, that, and the other. The moment you start putting the converters on, those figures get completely scrambled, and what you'll find tends to happen is things will need to be shot in manual because you need to up the speed quite considerably.
Yeah.
For instance, if you put a two times converter on and the camera's saying you want to shoot at 125th, change that to a 250th and open it up by one stop or something.
Well, and very often what you'll find, though, as well, is that the converter will automatically remove a stop or to two stops.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a recommendation on the converter. And the other thing is...
No, it physically takes it on the digital cameras. That's what I've got with the two times converter I've got. It physically takes two stops off me. So it automatic. The Canon one link interfaces well with the Canon camera, and it should do because, like you say, it's a $500
exactly.
Two times converter. But if I put on a 2.8 sports lens and I put the two times converter on, it automatically moves me to 5.6.
Yeah, it won't let you go lower than that.
It just will not let me go any lower than that. So I'm screwed just before I even start.
But also, one of the things it also does, it doubles the amount of aberration you get with a shot. For instance, if you're using a Tamron, which, you know, some of them are very nice, but if you're using something at 400mm on a Tamron, the focus is soft, anything between 300 and 400mm.
That's quarter turn, effectively, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. But you stick a two times converter on, it's not soft. You might as well be photographing through jelly.
Yeah, you know, you're going to start as well. If the Tamron lens, generally, the Tamrons can be quite expensive, but generally they're fairly budget lens in comparisons to the brand-named lenses.
Sure.
The zoom lenses get soft, as you say, but the chances are it probably has got an f-stop increment with it that goes from f4, say, or f3.5 up to f5.6 or 6.3 as you increase zoom. So that's really going to screw with your exposure, as you said, and it's also going to dump you. You'd be shooting at f11 before you know it. So that's going to have a significant effect on the exposure time that you've got, the blurring that you're going to get, the actual exposure time of the image itself. And you get like a dappling effect, don't you, across all of the image. Like you say, you're shooting through a gunge, effectively.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to get even your subjects nice and sharp as a result.
But one of the things I would say is if you're going to shoot this, I don't know what, you know, why Gary wants to use his setup. But one of the things I would say is if you're going to shoot anything, possibly, if you're going to shoot something manual, get it set up. You know, get the shot set up, you know, previous to, you know, going for it. And then as long as you've taken a couple of test shots, you should, you know, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to get a pretty good picture. Don't try and, if you've got a 300mm Tamron, don't try and make it a 600mm Tamron. Think about it as a 200 to 400.
Mm.
Stay within, you know, the confines of maybe the last 20%. Just ignore the last 20% of what you've got. And, you know, it sort of, again, goes against what we always say, but possibly I would overexpose the image in this situation rather than underexpose the image. If you've got exposure compensation, knock it up by 0.3 or 0.7. You might find that that will help to bring your pictures in a little bit sharper. It does go sure. against all the other rules we ever give you about underexposing. But when you're using a two times converter, if you underexpose, you might not be able to recover the sharpness.
I think the general thing there with zoom lenses in general is effectively whatever you, if you've bought a budget zoom lens, certainly you'll lose the last quarter turn, which will be somewhere in a region of like you say 20 to 30% of your overall zoom capacity.
Yeah. But you know, they are great. I mean, I was standing on my flat roof. We get all the fly paths here for Buckingham Palace. They literally come over our house. And I had a 2x converter on a Tamron. And I think I had a 600mm Tamron, so it was operating, I probably was using about 1,000mm as an equivalent. And the red arrows went past, and I have got some pictures, and some of the pictures are of the heads of the pilots.
Wow. Very, very good. And,
they're not bad. There's a little bit of grain in them, but nothing too terrible. So, you know, you get yourself set up, you can get some really, really clever shots for a fraction of the price of a 600mm lens or a 1,000mm lens.
There we go. Sound advice. Last word goes, of course, to our sponsors, UK2.net. We say every week, but it really makes a big difference to our network. They sponsor us. They give all the bandwidth out. We are halfway through the month, and we've nearly consumed an entire terabyte of data already, so we're going to blow all records out of the water this month. They don't complain. They just pick up the data loss. If you like listening to any of the podcasts on the BagelTech Network, please go to our site, bageltechnews.com, and just click on the link. You don't have to buy anything. Just click on the link and make sure that they know that we're getting people to go forwards. That will be enough for them to continue supporting us, because we're lost without them, plain and simple. I say it every week, but I can't think of a different way of putting it. They keep us afloat. We couldn't afford to consume the bandwidth we currently do without them. UK2.net, please do it from our tracking link, though, on bageltechnews.com. Alex, where can we get a hold of you, pal?
At AlexGFox, Twitter.
Brilliant. And you can get me, Ewan Rankin, on at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or ewanrankin.co.uk is my website, and Bagel Tech News on Twitter as well. We'll see you again next week. We'll have everyone back. We won't be sick, I hope. And hopefully, we'll be able to talk some sense. Thanks for listening.